I'm pulling in my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time to drive to work. So today is another part in my History of Design series. So last we talked, we talked about Zendikar, and we are moving into Scars of Mirrodin. Okay, so Mirrodin was the first sort of new world, or, you know, non-Dominarian world, that we decided to return to. So the origin of this is, Brady Dommermuth and I were huge fans of the Phyrexians. And so we made original Mirrodin. We planted the seeds for the return of the Phyrexians. For those that don't remember, in the invasion, in the Weatherlight Saga, which ends in invasion, Urso wipes out all the Phyrexians. The entire Phyrexian threat is gone, is purged from the multiverse. But they were too good a villain to keep down. So we created a story. And the idea is Karn, when he lost his spark, got infected by some Phyrexian oil. When he ends up making Mirrodin, he unwittingly brings it there. In the book on Mirrodin, we see the main bad guy, like in the first few pages, find this oil and it goes into his skin. And then we don't talk about it again, right? It's like very subtle. But the idea was, the original idea for this block was that it was going to be New Phyrexia. And we were going to spend a whole block in New Phyrexia. And only at the end, inspired by like the end of Planet of the Apes. I don't want to spoil a movie that came out in the 60s. But in Planet of the Apes, you find that there's an astronaut played by Charlton Heston. He crashes on an alien planet filled with where apes are the supreme form and humans are mere, like, you know, slaves of the apes. And but he finds out at the end that he hasn't changed planets, but he's gone through time. He's on Earth. I apologize for spoiling that movie. Anyway, so the idea was we were going to do a set that's all about, or a block that's all about New Phyrexia. And then only at the end do we realize it was Mirrodin. That was the plan. I really struggled with this block. I've had other podcasts where I go into a lot more detail on it. Suffice to say, I end up really rethinking a lot of how we structured stuff. It's the beginning of the next age of magic. It's such a profound change for me. It changes the stage of magic. And I spent a lot of time really getting into the idea of, I want, the idea of a block is the idea of this emotional resonance, that I want you to, you the player, to feel something. And we spent a lot of time and energy trying to get a sense of what are the Phyrexians and how can the gameplay of the Phyrexians match the flavor of the Phyrexians. How can we make you play in such a way that the mere act of playing itself is flavor? Anyway, the other big thing about this block is I realized partway, I really struggle with this block. Probably the block I struggled the most with. I eventually came to the conclusion that we had a really cool story that we weren't telling. And that was the fall of Mirrodin to the Phyrexians. So the idea is instead of New Phyrexia being the first set, we moved it to be the last set. And then, the idea I had was, what if we make some suspense? And the idea being, the first set, we're back on Mirrodin, but like 10% of the set is Phyrexian. We'd have watermarks to show you that. And the second set, it's 50-50, and there's a war. And then the third set, you know, the Phyrexians win. So while I'm pitching this to Bill, because I'm suggesting a change from what we were doing, Bill says, well, what if we don't tell people what the third set is? And I'm like, well, what do you mean by that? He's like, what if we don't tell them? What if we say it's either going to be called New Phyrexia or Mirrodin Pure? And we didn't tell, I think people even ordered the set for their store without knowing the name of the set. We revealed it right a little bit before previews, I think it got revealed. And the other thing we were trying to do at the time was we were spending a lot more time thinking about how to make pre-releases more of events. And so the idea of Mirrodin Besiege, which was the middle set, was we designed the set so half of it was Mirrodin and half of it was Phyrexian, and then divided them up such that in the pre-release, you chose either a Phyrexian box, a pre-release box, or a Mirrodin pre-release box, and then you only played cards with your watermark on them. Now, once again, there's a lot of things where we try something and we learn that the amount of effort it takes to do it is not worth... Now, unlike some of the gimmick sets, especially the gold one, people did like the pre-release. I think the pre-release was cool. There was a fault. So the idea being they're going to fight a war and then we don't know the outcome. Some people somehow thought that was like somehow there were two different sets and that the Mirrored and Belize pre-release would determine which set we released. We're not doing that much work. It was always going to be New Phyrexia. But there's something cool about the pre-release. I think that we have since learned that it was too much time and energy for something that people didn't care enough about. Although it was cool. I think it was a neat thing. The other thing we did with New Phyrexia as far as stretching magic a little bit is when we were putting the set together, we realized that having a small set didn't quite give us what we needed. And so we ended up making it a medium-sized set, which I think is the first, medium-sized, at least premier set in Magic. Meaning, you know, not as big as a large, but not so small as a small. But anyway, so the whole idea of that block also, something else is, we were trying to get more into telling larger stories. We had done the Weatherlight saga, and then after that ended, a lot of our stories were kind of block by block, right? The block was telling a story of that block. And we wanted to start getting in the habit of, you know, on some level, the Magic story has the qualities of a soap opera, or much like a comic book. Like, you know, there are storylines, but you pick up threads of earlier storylines. And so the idea of the Phyrexians, we wanted to reintroduce the Phyrexians in a bold way, right? We wanted to say, these guys are a threat, and go, no, really, these guys are a threat. And the idea of the Phyrexians was their fatal flaw was they didn't have a means to travel between planes. They weren't planeswalkers. And so while they took over Mirrodin, they couldn't get off Mirrodin. And that's where we left them. Like, they are dangerous. And Mirrodin, one of the reasons we also liked Mirrodin, I mean, obviously, Brady and I had set this up before this was true, but it turned out to be true. Mirrodin ended up to be a very, very powerful set. One of the most, you know, from a developmental standpoint, it's one of the most broken sets in Magic history, following only Urza Saga, I think. So the idea that when the Phyrexians overtook Mirrodin, you had the sense of Mirrodin, well, that was a powerful place. So it really gave the sense that the Phyrexians were this danger. And we were setting ourselves up. And like I said, we didn't pay that off for a while. Okay, so after Scars of Mirrodin, we get to Innistrad. So Innistrad has an interesting story. When we originally made Odyssey Block, which had this graveyard theme, Brady Domeroth and I were talking, and Brady said it was really odd. Now, at the time we did Odyssey, the people who did the story, the creative, and the designers were very separate. We would make our design and they would add a story to it, but they weren't connected. I mean, we would learn a little bit about the story and make a few cards for it, but they weren't organically connected. And so Brady wasn't working on the creative team yet. I think he was still in editing. But he and I had this talk, and what he said is, hey, a graveyard set, why, like, the story didn't make any sense. Like, a graveyard set wanted to be, like, you know, gothic horror. Like, you know, it's all about the graveyard. It should be a theme that matched that. And the idea of having a horror-based set really excited me. The idea of, I know we had done Chems Kamigawa, and it was based on Japanese mythology, but Japanese mythology was very, not a lot of people know, I mean, outside of Japan, know Japanese mythology. Whereas, you know, the horror genre, we're talking about the classics of screen and books and TV, like, that stuff's a lot better known. Pop culture, when you're doing something, actual pop culture genre stuff is just more resonant than cultural stuff, only because less people know it. Not that we do plenty of cultural stuff, but I'm saying that just less people know it. The pop culture stuff is just more people are aware of it. And the trope space you're playing in is just a little broader and deeper. Because a lot of movies and things had to work there, so there's a lot of stuff that's been formed. And media does a good job of reaffirming tropes. It's the nature of how media works. So, anyway, I had wanted to do a top-down set based on the genre of horror. That's what I wanted to do. And I got a lot of resistance. This was another set that kept getting pushed back. And originally, by the way, I think the plan originally was... So what's going to happen is this was another year that we didn't have a core set. So Bill said, okay, I want large set, small set, different world, large set, new mechanics. And so the original plan was that Innistrad was going to be the second large set. We were going to do something completely different. And we had a, I think it was a company-wide contest to create a brand new plane. I think Brian Tinsman won it. And it was a world-inspired, I don't know how to even describe it. It was inspired by a lot of video game stuff. Anyway, so that won, and that's what we were going to do. But as we started planning it, I think Bill didn't have a lot of confidence in it. So, and at the same time, someone had talked about how it was odd that we were doing the horror set in the spring rather than the fall, because the fall would be right by Halloween. So, so Bill came to me and said, we're thinking of moving it. If we move this to the fall, it has to have a small set. Do you think you can support a large set and a small set? And I was like, Bill, I'm doing the genre of horror. I have enough material. We can do it. So we swapped the two. And then, much like happened with Rise of the Eldrazi, with Zendikar, creative team said, look, we just don't have the resources to build two worlds. They were not staffed up like they are now. What if we do a giant event that changes the world? And so they ended up creating this thing. There's this angel called Avacyn, for those who know Innistrad would know. And Avacyn disappeared, and it was her disappearance. Like, the humans were in disarray. Like, things were going bad for the humans. When we open up an Innistrad, like, the humans on their last legs, it goes to Dark Ascension, where it gets even worse. And then we realize that she's been trapped in something called the Hell Vault. And then Liliana comes, and she's trying to find one of her demons, and Griselbrand. And Griselbrand's also trapped in the Hell Vault. In fact, I think what happened was Avacyn was trying to put Griselbrand in the Hell Vault. The angels were putting on the demons in the Hell Vault to try to clean up Innistrad. And Griselbrand trapped Avacyn in with him. And so in order to get Griselbrand out, I think that Liliana has to trick Thassa into breaking open the Hell Vault. And anyway, and then what happens is once Avacyn is restored, it becomes like the tides have turned. The humans have the advantage, and the monsters are on the run, is the idea. The set followed a lot of the traditional stuff. You know, like I said, this was sort of the alternate year where the second set was large. I did, actually, the first and small, I did both the Innistrad sets. The large set of the following was Return to Ravnica, which I will get to. I thought that would be a good place to let Ken Nagel, I'll get to why Ken Nagel's there. We'll get to that in a second. A good place for Ken Nagel to get his chops. While we have on Ken Nagel, real quick, and another important thing that happened, trying to think when it happened. It happened during Lorwyn, I should have mentioned this during Lorwyn. My boss at the time was Randy Bueller. Randy Bueller came to me and said, look, we've discovered that the Pro Tour is a very efficient way to get new developers, play designers. But we need more designers, more like, you know, people who can, you know, make mechanics out of blank things, you know, we need raw blue sky sort of designers. How would I find some more? So my wife and I had watched a lot of TV, and we watched a lot of different reality shows. And there's a bunch of reality shows, Project Runway, Top Chef type things, where, okay, you get a bunch of people that have a skill, they're good at a skill, you test them on the skill, and then the best one, you know, gets some job or something. get some, you know, or wins money, or whatever. They get something that will help their career is the idea. So I said, I would like to do a reality show to find a designer. So the very first great designer search. The idea was if you met the qualifications, you could enter. I mean, you had to be 18, be able to work in the U.S. and be willing to move to Renton. The first place prize was a 6-month internship. And then we let whoever wanted to enter that meet those qualifications enter. The first one we cut down to 16. Later ones we'd cut down to 8. And then every week we would have a challenge and then eliminate some number of players. When there were 16, we eliminated more per week. When there was 8, we eliminated one per week. We've done 3 great designer searches, and all of them produced really good designers, one of which was Ken Nagel. So that's where Ken Nagel came from. So that had happened during Lorwyn. I think Ken and Alexis Jansen won. Ken came in second. We gave both of them internships. And then Alexis ended up working on Magic Online, and Ken ended up staying in R&D. But anyway, and their first set, I think, was Shadowmoor. So, okay. So, sorry, back to Innistrad. So we were making Innistrad. I did both sets of Innistrad. The only second small set I think I've led. And then Brian Tinsman did Avacyn Restored. I was actually on the design team, but Brian led that team. And like I said, the one thing we had learned from last time when we had done Rise of the Eldrazi is the audience wanted a little bit more connection than we had since we were on the same plane. So we did connect it a little bit. Undying, which was a mechanic we introduced in Dark Ascension, stayed. And there's a little bit more carryover. There's a little bit of typo that we carried over some stuff just so it felt cohesive as a world and not completely different. Rise of Eldrazi, there just wasn't enough Zendikar on it with sort of the notes we got from people. Even though we were still on the plane of Zendikar, it felt a little bit too removed. So we had a little more continuity, although it was mostly new mechanics in a new set. Okay, so after Innistrad was returned to Ravnica. So I had... So originally, when we'd gone to original Ravnica, it was large, small, small, and we had done 4-3-3. There were 4 sets in the large set, 4 guilds in the large set, 3 guilds in the medium small set, sorry, in the small set, the medium small, sorry, the small set in the middle, the second small set, and the third small set, or third set, which was the small set, also had 3 people in it. Going back, we realized, the guilds were so popular, so this was... We had returned to Mirrodin. Mirrodin was our first return in, like, once we had entered the, starting with Mirrodin, we had sort of left, we left the safety of Dominaria, and then we did not go back. I mean, we eventually would go back. I'm sorry, we went back in Time Spiral. So we did revisit in Time Spiral, and then we would not go back after Time Spiral for 13 years. So once we had sort of were the exploring the multiverse phase of Magic sets, the first one we came back to was Mirrodin and Scars of Mirrodin. But Mirrodin went through a lot of changes. I mean, it became New Phyrexia. It pretty much got remade. And the first set was Mirrodin, so it was a return. But it slowly got shaped and became New Phyrexia. Ravnica, we weren't really interested in a major shape. I mean, people loved Ravnica. It was more of we wanted to deliver more of Ravnica. And the idea we came up with was a tiny change. We realized that one of the things that we liked was large sets drafted better. Like, the nice thing about the large set of original Ravnica was, hey, you had 5 guilds, and you could draft those 5 guilds, and you could play those 2 color decks. The second we introduced the second and third sets to it, it got a lot more, like, it was hard to play 2 colors. So the idea we had was, what if we had 2 large sets? And we've gotten in the habit now of saying, hey, we could just have extra large sets. What if we had 2 large sets? Instead of going large, small, large, what if we went large, large, small? Although the small would become a medium. But what if we put what if we did a large set not as in the third slot, but in the second slot? And the idea is that way we could do 2 back-to-back sets with 5 guilds in them. Not 4 like the first time, but 5. So you could actually draft, we just felt like having 5 was more balanced. And the idea was you would draft each set by itself. So you started getting the mindset of, We have large sets, but you could draft a large set by itself. And then the idea is we would make a third set. So the first set was called Return to Ravnica. The second one was called Gatecrash. And the third was called Dragon's Maze. So the idea was the third set would be drafted with the first two sets. So, like, you had a chance to draft each of the guild sets by themselves. And then when we drafted them together, the third set would have all 10 guilds in it. That's why we made it medium rather than small. So Ken Nagel ran Return to Ravnica. I ran Gatecrash. Although I think I co-led it with Mark Gottlieb, who we were training. And then the third set was Alexis Jansen, who had won the first Great Designer Search. The interesting thing there is, it's a good example where we didn't change the basics of what made Ravnica Ravnica. It was a guild set. There were 10 guilds. Each guild had a mechanic. There were cycles of 10 that ran through both of the main sets. We had additional stuff that would run through the third set. We made a couple mistakes, but in general, one of the things that was interesting is one of the progressions of us making multicolor sets over the years is getting a better understanding of what we need to do. And a big part of that is making sure that you have the resources to do it. So one of the big innovations of Return to Ravnica is we made the gate land, the gate duels. And the idea was we wanted you to have better mana fixing, so we gave you tapped dual lands at common. We had done tapped dual lands before, but not at common. That is, okay, we're just going to give you, we want to make sure that you have the access in limited to do what you do. So we put them at common, but because at rare we were bringing back the shock lands, which were very popular from the first time, and we didn't want the shock lands just to seem strictly better, we made the gate subtype. I think a lot of the second trip to Ravnica was us doing a lot of general improvement things. The 4-3-3, which was cool, did not draft great. At least, it got very muddy later on as you were drafting more sets. And so, we wanted more opportunities to draft two-color. Like, part of the promise of Ravnica was it was a two-color block. Well, only the first set could you draft two colors. We wanted to... So now, the first two sets, you both could draft two colors. The third set, you probably drafted more than two. Although, I think you could draft two in the third set. At least there were offerings of all combinations. It turns out that the third set was a little crowded. I do think there's a way to put 10 guilds in one set. I don't think we quite understood it at the time. Look at something like Bloomborough. We have learned how to have 10 two-color pairs with definition in a way that I think back then we didn't understand. We also, we named it Dragon's Maze because dragon referred to Niv-Mizzet. But Niv-Mizzet wasn't in the set, and there wasn't really dragon. I don't think there was a creature-type dragon in the set. And people somehow with dragon in the name... Scourge upcoming? I think Scourge is upcoming. Anyway. Scourge was the third set in Onslaught. And that had a dragon theme, but we didn't really have that many dragons in it. And people were like, hey, this set people thought... we didn't advertise that it had a dragon theme. It didn't have a dragon theme. But dragon in the name made people think there was a dragon theme, even though there wasn't. So... We were 0-2 for delivering on what people perceived as a dragon theme. We would eventually fix that. A good example of that year is we didn't change a lot of the fundamentals of what the world was, but we did change, we changed our tools a lot. We restructured how we made sets. We added components to the set. And the other thing you're starting to see here is there's just a new guard coming. I think Brian Tinsman would leave soon. We're training a new set of designers. You'll see as we look at who's leading sets that we're part of going into the next evolution of new sets of designers and such. Return to Ravnica did fine. People like Ravnica. Okay, so Return to Ravnica was followed by Theros. So Theros, the interesting thing about Theros was I originally had pitched a block. I was definitely getting more into doing experimental things with blocks. I was trying to shake blocks up, and I was trying to give them an identity. So the idea I had pitched was it was a block in which the first set was a prehistoric set, the second set was like a medieval set, and the third set was a futuristic set. But the gimmick was they were all the same world. that we would come to a world and then jump thousands of years at a time and come back to see that world. The problem was, even though I got thumbs up from the R&D, from the design side of things, Brady, who ran the creative team, said, look, we have trouble doing, you know, the reason they didn't want to do a twist in Innistrad is they were worried about doing two sets. This was not just, this was three. And they go, no way in the world we can do three worlds. So we had talked about doing a Greek mythology set. In fact, it was the runner-up to when we were, for Chance Kamigawa, Japanese won out, but Greek mythology had been a close runner-up. Greek mythology was a huge influence on lots of precursors to Magic, Dungeons & Dragons, and to Magic itself. There's a lot of Greek mythology running through Magic. I mean, Richard was very influenced by Greek mythology. So we had talked for forever about doing a Greek-inspired set. And so Brady said, how about that? Let's audible to that, something we had talked about doing forever. And I think Brady was the one that said, hey, maybe we can put enchantments in. Because we just hadn't, even though Urza Saga had done enchantments, we hadn't really done enchantments in any loud way, and not since Invasion started the block themes. What if we had, the setting was Theros, and the mechanical theme was enchantments. That's where we started. And one of the cool things about it was, early on, we had figured out that the way to imbue, like, we started realizing that part of building a real cool world was you had to imbue the color wheel organically in the world. And for Theros, that the idea came really quickly was, let's make our pantheon represent the color wheel. So the five main gods are the five main colors, and the 10 minor gods are the 10 two-color combinations. Theros was... So one of the things that was going on was I was constantly... There's what we call the third set problem. Like I said before, I said this in a previous podcast. We would make a set, a large set, then we make two small sets, and the small sets just keep selling worse than the one before it, even proportionally to the number of cards in it. And so we were trying to figure out how to undo this. So, like, one of the things I did in Theros was I knew that people wanted an Enchantment Matters deck. We were doing, for the first time outside Urza Saga, which I guess people wasn't as loud as it could have been, I guess, in retrospect. I wanted to do an Enchantment Matters block, but I held back on the enchantment. I wanted to do an enchantment block. I held back on the Enchantment Matters and made that a huge theme in Journey to Nyx, which was that. So is Theros, Born of the Gods, Journey to Nyx. And the idea was, okay, I'm going to take something, I'm going to withhold it, and hold it to the last set. What ended up happening was the third set ended up being more exciting, and the second set ended up not being exciting. Like, we pulled enough stuff away from it. I think Theros did a lot of things right. There was a lot of cool ingrained flavor in Theros. I think we used enchantments in a cool way to represent the influence of the gods. I think the gods themselves were very popular. We managed to take a mechanic that players, that we were very excited about, that didn't excite players, and bring it back and reinvent it in Devotion. Chroma had been mechanic in Eventide, and it was something that I had really high excitement for that just didn't work out. And the idea was, hey, maybe it wasn't that people didn't like it, or I mean people didn't like it, but maybe the reason people didn't like it was us, was execution. And so we revamped it, did Devotion. Devotion was a giant hit, which was an important lesson. But you can see with Theros, the interesting thing about Theros block is that there's a lot of experimentation going on. And the funny thing for a long time is we just accepted that that's the way blocks were. The first set was going to sell the most, so hey, make sure the first set sells as much as possible because every set after it can't sell as much as the first set. So let's maximize the first set. And we were spending a lot. Like the important thing to me was, I really wanted every set to have an identity, and I wanted it to be something unique to itself. I mean, we're well in the point where every mechanic had its own mechanics, and we did in blocks. We did carry over mechanics, but we also made sure that each set introduced something new that wasn't there before. We also did something interesting in that block that we hadn't done, where we stopped using mechanic in the second set, realized it was a mistake. Monstrosity, and then brought it back for the third set, which was we had not done that before. Normally, if we carried through a mechanic, sometimes we carried from the first set into the second set and stopped before the third set, but I don't think we had stopped it in the second set and brought it back in the third set. So Lots of experimentation. The other thing that's happening, and that Theros, I think, was a really good example, is we are getting better and better of imbuing a sense of feel. Like I said, with kind of the second age, or not second age, but the new age that started with Scars of Mirrodin, was the idea of we really, you know, Scars of Mirrodin, we want you to feel, what does it feel to be the Phyrexians? And Innistrad is like, okay, it's gothic horror, we want you to feel afraid. Ravnica was a little more old school than new school, because we were really recapturing we didn't really reinvent it. I asked if we could reinvent a little more. But we got to Theros. Theros had the sense of adventure, the idea that you built up, and all the different aspects of the set. You know, I called it gods, heroes, and monsters. Your gods could, through devotion, you know, level up and become, take form. Or your heroes could, through heroic and different auras, get stronger and better. And become true demigods and such. Or your monsters could level up and you could use monstrous and you could make them even stronger and make the most powerful version of your monster. That everything sort of built up and created the sense of adventure and scope that we wanted. So the thing that is interesting is I think that we were getting better and better at sort of evoking and feeling things and evoking things. We were getting a lot more into resonant also. That's another thing that Innistrad really had done, was a lot of what we realized was, look, our goal is to make all of you excited. And one of the things that we found was very compelling, and obviously when we get into more modern day, resonant is something we've leaned in heavy, maybe a little too heavy, that's a fine note, but anyway, it really taught us the value of resonance, of the idea of Innistrad was like, okay, we're tapping into all this cool horror that people like. Theros was tapping into Greek mythology, and we could do it in such a way that really sort of drew people in and made the sets really exciting, and people really enjoyed them. But anyway, that is where we are. We're up through Theros block. So next time, we'll get to Khans of Tarkir block, which was very innovative in its own right, and a lot of changes came from that. But I will talk about that next time. So anyway, guys, I'm here at work, so we know what that means. It's the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to be making magic. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.